Hi, everyone. My name is Helen Schaefer, and I am an alcoholic. And, I just messed up my whole iPad. I have to get to step 4 and 5. I'm doing both of those tonight, so. It's okay. Let me give you a few essentials. Some of you have been here before, some of you haven't. I have a home group. It's Tuesday Night Cranesville, out in the country. Watch out, I'm looking for a lead for the end of the month, so could be you. I have a sponsor and a co-sponsor now. I just picked up a co-sponsor recently. And I have a sobriety date, and it is September 18th, 1986. So if I don't mess up royally in the next 2 weeks, I will be celebrating 32 years of sobriety. I remember back just before I was one year sober, I was so scared that I wasn't going to make it to the year. And this is a little bit strange, but bear with me. I was terrified that I was going to be struck drunk. You know, like you're walking down the street and the lightning bolt comes out. Well, I was going to get struck drunk. Where that came from or what I was, I have no idea, but that's where my mind was. Today, I'm not afraid of being struck drunk. I know that it would be my choice to pick up that drink today, and not a very wise one. After all I've learned and been through in this journey. I got all kinds of junk with me tonight, so you're going to have to bear with me. This is sort of a classroom. It is a classroom, and it's been a classroom for me. I'll tell you what, there is, in my opinion, no better way to really dive into these steps than having to come up here and try to explain what it's like taking these steps and what I've done wrong and what I've done right and the benefits of them. So I thank you for this experience. The first thing I always like to do with each of the steps, because in step 12 it says practice these principles in all our affairs. Well, for a long time I was thinking, what are these principles? And so I found in several different places the principles behind each step, or that each step exemplifies. And the fourth step is honesty and courage. Makes sense. And the fifth is truth and integrity. And I should have looked up the difference between honesty and truth, but I didn't. So those are the principles that we're expected to practice in all our affairs once we get to the 12th step. And it doesn't hurt to start practicing a little early. And, of course, the fourth step is where I'll start, and it says that we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And now that I have taken my will and my life out of the clutches of alcohol and placed them into the loving care of my higher power, it is time to do a fourth step. You know, that decision is, let's go on with this. And you know, basically, I had turned my life over to alcohol before I came into this fellowship. It was in charge. Even when I was doing other things, alcohol was in charge. So, you know, thinking about that third step, making that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of something instead of the destruction of something is a very, very wise decision. So here I am at the fourth step. And what is this honesty going to do for me? Well, I have chosen, as I've gone through these, to use As Bill Sees It as a reference. And most of the time, I have been going to grapevine articles that he has written and letters he has written. Because I know that some of us don't read As Bill Sees It regularly. I have on several occasions in my sobriety, but not as much as I read the 12 and the 12. 12 and 12 and the big book. So, what is this truth and honesty that step 4 will do for me? Well, from a grapevine article back in 1961, Bill says, "How truth makes us free is something that we AAs can well understand. It cuts the shackles that once bound us to alcohol. It continues to release us from conflict and miseries beyond reckoning. It banishes fear and isolation. The unity of our fellowship, the love we cherish for each other, the esteem in which the world holds us, all these are products of the truth which, under God, we have been privileged to perceive. And those are some really neat promises in there. And the one that sort of struck me as I was reading this over, the esteem in which the world holds us. And that doesn't mean us as individuals. I believe that means us as the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, obviously, police respect Alcoholics Anonymous. Judges respect Alcoholics Anonymous. The press respects Alcoholics Anonymous. We are held in esteem because of the principles that this fellowship stands for. I love that. So, when it comes to taking an inventory, Bill made several references to some of his shortcomings as he was doing his inventory. Again, this comes from a Grapevine article, and this time it was written back in 58. And I'll find the page here. My self-analysis has frequently been faulty. Sometimes I've failed to share my defects with the right people. At other times, I've confessed their defects rather than my own. And at still other times, my confession of defects has been more in the nature of loud complaints about my circumstances and my problems. So, taking a look at this inventory, we see that even one of our co-founders found it difficult to come up with the truth when looking at ourselves and beginning to write these things down. He also had a propensity, I had to throw in that big word, but I wrote it in here because I knew I'd forget it. Even Bill had a propensity towards self-justification. Again, Grapevine, back in 61. And there he says, I used to take comfort from the exaggerated belief in my own honesty. My New England kinfolk had taught me the sanctity of all business commitments and contracts, saying, a man's word is his bond. After this rigorous conditioning, business honesty always came easy. I never flim-flammed anyone. However, this small fragment of readily won virtue did produce some interesting liabilities. I never failed to whip up a fine contempt for those of my fellow Wall Streeters who were prone to shortchange their customers. This was arrogant enough, but the ensuing self-deception proved even worse. My prized business honesty was presently converted into a comfortable cloak under which I could hide many serious flaws that beset other departments of my life. Being certain of this one virtue, it was easy to conclude that I had them all. For years on end, this prevented me from taking a good look at myself. You know, I love that reading, idea that because there are things that are still good in my life when I'm out there drinking, I must be okay. You know, and for me it was, I still have my house. I still have my job. I still have custody of my kids. So can I really be that bad? You know, these would have been taken away if I was really, really bad. Well, fortunately, after I came in here and you taught me that, you know, that elevator goes down and I can get off at any floor. And fortunately, I did get off before I lost the job and lost custody of the kids. And yeah, where was I? Okay. And another fault that I had when I was out there drinking was my self-justification. This is probably one of my favorite ones when I was drinking. As we were talking about just before the meeting started, I was a high school teacher professionally for 31 years. And towards the end of my drinking, I was, of course, teaching all day with teenagers in the room constantly. And at that time, I had two teenage sons. And so I justified my heading out to the bar every night is, well, I spent all day long with teenagers. I need some adult companionship. Well, if you drank in the bars I drank in, that was a very loose definition of adult companionship. And but I justified it, you know. I needed to go out and, because I was a single parent and there was no other adult in the house. And, you know, I need adults to be around. I can't be around teenagers anymore. And then to find out that Bill also had a propensity towards this self-justification, I thought, well, okay, I've shared more than one character defect with our co-founder. And again, it's a Grapevine article, this time from 1958, and I don't remember that one quite as well. And what? Don't tell me I have a wrong page number in here. Nope, there it is. No? Oh, here it is. I found it. Sorry about that. Yeah. Nope. I knew this was going to happen. There it is. Virtue and self. Oh, no, that was the one I just did. Okay, that was... Okay, let me put that down for right now because I'm losing my place. So, taking a look at the words in that fourth set. Searching, fearless, and moral. So, of course, I go to the definition because that's what I was taught in early sobriety, to head to the dictionary. Searching is defined as thoroughly scrutinizing, especially in a disconcerting way. Well, that sent me on to the dictionary for one more word. What is disconcerting mean? And that means causing one to feel unsettled. So this searching inventory, just by the definition of it, means that we're going to get churned up emotionally as we're doing this, which is a very, very scary thing. You know, a lot of us don't want to bring that garbage up, back up from the past. You know, we've got it buried, but we only we buried it alive. And anything buried alive will come back to haunt us. And so, and of course, after having done the first three steps thoroughly, we've got someone to rely on. We've got a higher power now to rely on as we dig up all this trash from the past. Fearless. Oh, I loved when I looked up the definition of this. Lacking fear. Okay, big deal, you know. But I went to As Bill Sees It for some information on fear, and if I can find the page this time. I had them all marked. I don't know what happened to all my markers. Oh, there it is. As faith grows, so does inner security. The vast underlying fear of nothingness commences to subside. We of AA find that our basic antidote for fear is spiritual awakening. And of course, that's what we're working for here as we do these steps. We're working towards that spiritual awakening in the 12th step. Okay, so then I looked up fear. And fear is an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or a threat. Okay, that defines the fear for me. And yeah, it was going to cause pain. Dredging up all that garbage, that I had stuffed on there that nobody was ever going to find out about. And you're asking me to put it on paper? Oh, my goodness. So, Bill, again, another Grapevine article, all about fear. And it has to be split up into two pages, so I have to keep looking here. The first one is, the problem of resolving fear has two aspects. We shall have to try for all the freedom from fear that is possible for us to attain. Then we shall need to find both the courage and the grace to deal constructively with whatever fear remains. And the next one talks about what to do with that remaining fear, I believe. When fear persisted, we knew it for what it was, and we became able to handle it. We began to see each adversity as a God-given opportunity to develop the kind of courage which is born of humility rather than bravado. And I really like that idea that fear that comes with adversity is given to us, me, as an opportunity to grow. And I'll tell you what, the past year and a half, a little over a year and a half, I faced a lot of fears. And I kept falling back on the sayings from AA. God won't take me to anything that He won't bring me through. And God never gives me anything more than I can handle. Of course, I always add to that, I wish He didn't have so much confidence in me. But today I truly believe that. And I'm not afraid today. Today, right now. Now, that doesn't mean tonight I won't be, or tomorrow morning I won't be, and it doesn't mean that last week I wasn't. But right now, as I stand here, outside of afraid of sounding a little foolish, I have no big fear right now. Let's see. Yep, did that. Okay, when I was getting ready to do my fourth and fifth step, I got a spiritual advisor. My sponsor at that time never mentioned anything to me about the steps, and I wasn't bold enough to ask her. So I found this spiritual advisor. She was in my hometown, and I picked her. I think God led me to her. But I had heard that before she came into town, half of her congregation left that church because she was a female divorced minister. And I thought, okay, she has faced some adversity. And when I went in, I called, made an appointment to go in and talk with her, and she pulled her 12 and 12 off the shelf. She was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but she was familiar with this program of recovery. So we began talking about doing this fourth step, because I wasn't ready to just die in on my own. And one of the things was my fear. And she gave me, and this is 31 years ago, she gave me this prayer about my fear. And she told me at that time that prayer does not always have to be words. It can be done in images. And she said, I want you to imagine that there is a deep pit in the ground. And a basketball is dropped into that pit. And it's too narrow to fit down in, for a body to fit down in to get it. And it's too deep just to reach in. And she said, now how would you get that basketball out of there? Well, fortunately for me, before I come up with some dumb solution, she gave me an answer. She said, just go get a water hose and begin filling that. And when the ground is saturated, the water will begin filling that pit, raising that basketball up to the top, And you can simply lift it out of there. And she said, now I want you to imagine that your fear is that basketball. And let the grace of God flow into you and lift that fear up to the top so that you can get rid of it. It was a very, very powerful image of dealing with my fear at that time, and it still is today. I've never forgotten that. So, I know I'll face fear throughout my entire life. I'll read what Bill has to say about this. Some of these fears that I have are healthy fears. You know, I don't like lightning. It can do damage. I'm not going to stand out with an umbrella up in a lightning storm. You know, that's a healthy. And some unhealthy fears, like going to be struck drunk. That's sort of an unhealthy type fear. But Bill's reference to that. The achievement of freedom from fear is a lifetime undertaking, one that can never be wholly completed. When under heavy attack, acute illness, or other conditions of serious insecurity, we shall all react to this emotion, well or badly, as the case may be. Only the self-deceived will claim perfect freedom from fear. So, I do not need to be too hard on myself when I am fearful of some situation. There has been a situation. Well, I don't know why. Was that page? Yes, it was page 263. Okay, we're still in the definitions. That was fear. I did a lot on fear because fear is a big emotion for me. In fact, today I think a tire blew out on 79, which is very close to my house, and I went running around to see where the gunshot was. So I have fear. Moral. It's a searching, fearless, moral inventory. And what does the word moral mean? And it's defined as concerning the principles of right and wrong behavior and the goodness or badness of human character. So, if it's supposed to be a moral inventory, I need to include a few things in there that I'm doing right, too, I believe. You know, this can't all be about wrong behavior and badness of my character. I need to talk a little bit about my right behavior and what I did well in my life. I don't know about you, but I have. Still do, although I live alone now, so it isn't as bad. Blaming others for how I'm feeling or acting. And I love the fact that Bill addresses that also in a letter that he wrote way back in 1966. And that's page 44. Too much of my life has been spent dwelling upon the faults of others. This is the most subtle and perverse form of self-satisfaction, which permits us to remain comfortably unaware of our own defects. Too often we are heard to say, if it weren't for him or her, how happy I'd be. So even Bill acknowledged the fact that sometimes it's easier for me to blame someone else than to take responsibility myself. As I said, I'm living alone now, so when something was misplaced, it was always, I know Tom didn't put it away where it's supposed to be. Where can it be? Well, I live alone now, and so if it's not in the right place, I don't have anyone to blame but me. I need to take that responsibility, but I need to in the bigger matters, the more important matters in my life, too. And it's not only Bill Wilson that I admire. I admire in some of those ancient Greek philosophers. And one of them who had some very wise things to say was Socrates. And one of his quotes was, "An unexamined life is not worth living." Wow. That fits right in with AA. Here we are in our fourth step. Eventually, we're going to look at our tenth step. Both of those, examining the life that we're living today. When we get to the big book, it says in there that when we begin to write our fourth step, that our we were usually as definite as the example, you know, Mr. Brown and Mr. Brown's wife and all that kind of stuff there in the big book. Well, my first fourth step, I had no idea how to do that. So what I basically did, it sort of looked like a Reader's Digest condensed novel. You know, it was long paragraphs written on legal paper, and it was okay. I stayed sober. I got that crap out. I mean, that stuff out. But you know, if I have followed what I do today and was taught since then, that fourth step can also serve then when it's time for that sixth and seventh step to look at my character defects. And when it's time for the eighth and ninth step to make those amends. And so what I brought with me tonight, and I've left a few of them up here, are the formats. This has five columns rather than the three, because then it also has the character defects in it. And I know many of you already have this. I got it at a step workshop that I went to. But I'll leave copies of it up here in case anyone doesn't have one of those. It's a wonderful way to do a fourth step. Then, of course, you have to have the right paper. And I went to Staples. And this is graph paper. And it's nice big graph paper. And I do mine right in here, and it leaves me more room for these columns, and I just love it. This is my fourth step notepad. And I have all my materials for my fourth step that stay right in there, and this stays in a big part of my desk because you people were so kind as to let me have last week off. Well, let's see. It would have been a week ago last Saturday night. I didn't decide. My brain was my enemy again. Situation in my life. Dealing with my daughter-in-law was still unresolved, and it's the one whose sons play football, so I knew I was going to come in contact with her this past weekend, and I decided to stay awake and worry about it. Well, come a week ago Sunday morning, I thought, well, if that's keeping me up, obviously I need to do a fourth step on that. And so I sat down that Sunday morning, and it was only dealing with her and her mother, and got out my trusty old graph paper there, and I did a fourth step, called my co-sponsor, and went down on Monday and did a fifth step with her. And it was fantastic. It revealed to me some character defects that I thought I had pretty well. Yeah, those are under control, but no, they're not. You know, I may not do a lot of comparing myself to others in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you taught me to identify, not to compare. But I wasn't taking that outside of the rooms, and I was still comparing myself. I wanted to be the best grandma, and I was competitive. You know, I didn't start this argument, this disagreement, this whatever it is. It's not an argument because we've never argued. It's not a disagreement. It's just an upheaval in the family. But my attitude has added to it. And if I'm being jealous, and if I'm being competitive, even though I don't say anything, it comes out in my attitude. And that's where I found my part in all this mess that's going on here. I lost something here. Anyhow, Bill's view on the fourth step. A letter he wrote back in 57. Remember it? No, I don't. I'm lying. I don't remember 1957. Yeah, I do a little bit. The moral inventory is a cool examination of the damages that occurred to us during life and a sincere effort to look at them in a true perspective. This has the effect of taking the ground glass out of us, the emotional substance that still cuts and inhibits. What is this doing on me? Get down there. Okay, so... Once that fourth step is written, my dear friend Julie, and some of you remember Julie Wakely, passed away a few years ago. She wrote her fourth step, folded it up, and put it in her purse and carried it around with her for a year. That is not a good idea, and Julie would admit it. She moved from Buffalo down to here, and she just carried that around until she finally got a sponsor down here. And you know, churning up all that stuff, bringing it all back up, and not sharing it with another person, it's not a good idea. I don't know that I've ever done it quite as fast as do my fourth step on a Sunday and do my fifth step on Monday, but I'm retired, so that's not a problem now, finding the time. And I knew I needed to take care of this situation before I met up with these people. So what is that fifth step? Admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And this quote comes from the 12 and 12, and I couldn't find anyone more appropriate than this one in the book. So all of AA steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than the fifth. Scarcely any step is more necessary to long-term sobriety and peace of mind. AA experience has taught us we cannot live alone with our pressing problems and the character defects which cause or aggravate them. If step four has revealed a stark relief to those experience, I'm sorry, if step four has revealed in stark relief those experiences we'd rather not remember, then the need to quit living by ourselves with those tormenting ghosts of yesterday get more urgent than ever. We have to talk to someone about them. You know, Julie's carrying it around for a year. Scary. Well, I don't know if it's here or later. I know I thought I'll say it now if I'm supposed to say it later. Oh, it is right here. Who we're going to share that fifth step with? Or fourth step. Who we're going to share the fourth step, take our fifth step. And Bill has a suggestion. When we consult an AA friend, we should not be reluctant to remind him of our need for full privacy. Intimate communication is normally so free and easy among us that an AA advisor may sometimes forget when we expect him to remain silent. The protective sanctity of this most healing of human relations ought never be violated. Such privileged communications have priceless advantages. We find in them the perfect opportunity to be as honest as we know how to be. We do not have to think of the possibility of damage to others, nor need we fear ridicule or condemnation. Here, too, we have the best possible chance of spotting self-deception. So when I'm talking out loud with someone, I need to talk with someone that I know will respect that confidence. Absolutely. And if I do not know anyone in the rooms that I feel that confident yet with, then I go outside and I do it with someone from a church, whether it be a priest, a minister, a rabbi. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with going to someone else to share that, which I did with my first one. Ever since then, I've shared them with either my sponsor or my co-sponsor. And, where am I now? Oh, same Grapevine article. He goes on to say, if we are fooling ourselves, a competent advisor can see this quickly. And as he skillfully guides us away from our fantasies, we are surprised to find that we have few of the usual urges to defend ourselves against unpleasant truths. In no other way can fear, pride, and ignorance be so readily melted. After a time, we realize we are standing firm on brand new foundation for integrity, and we gratefully credit our sponsors who advice pointed that way. Thinking back to these, the last few fifth steps I've done, the women that I have done them with have asked very pointed questions as I'm going through. They may have been asking them for their own clarification, but it gave me clarification too. In fact, so much so that I no longer just sit with my four-step paper. I also have pen in hand because they're going to add some things, ask some questions, make some points on things that I need to write down, that I need to remember. They may bring up another character defect that I wasn't aware was involved in the situation that I'm talking with them about. So it's a big, big choice when I choose who to do that fifth step with. So that first fifth step I did with that counselor, or that minister. And I had this feeling that I should walk out of her office that day just about 3 foot off the ground. That I should feel so great that I got all this garbage out. And I didn't feel that way. And it really ticked me off, if you wanted to know the truth. I wanted that relief. Okay, so it didn't come, you know? And people talk about that happening, which is great if it happens to happen to you. But I'll tell you what happened to me. Within a short period of time, I had a memory of an event from back in my drinking days. And it was a very, very painful event. But it wasn't a painful memory anymore. It was a memory of a painful event, but all the emotion was gone from that memory. I had left it there in that fifth step. And I haven't forgotten what happened, but it doesn't churn up all that emotion in me again like it did. And that's another reason that I knew that I needed to do another fourth and fifth step just last week, when all those emotions were being churned up. That obviously I have not completely taken care of it. And God's worked this situation in my life beautifully so far. But instead of trusting that He'll complete the process, I took it back and tried to figure out how I was going to do it on my own. You know, I just took it right back to myself. And that sleepless night convinced me that I needed to talk with someone about this. And you know, I had to look this up to get the wording right. 12 and 12, and it's not, I think it's back in step 10, I looked it up. That spiritual axiom, that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. And, you know, that's what I was feeling. I was upset. I knew there was something wrong inside me, and I needed to get it out. And I don't mess around with it today. You know, I'm not going to let it fester for the next 6 months. I am going to get it out today. And I'm going to take a, as we will next week in the sixth and seventh step, take a look at those defects and say, okay, so I handled that defect in this situation. It isn't showing up in this situation, but... So, yeah, oops, I missed one marker. Let me see which one I... Nope, I did that one. I forgot to take the marker out. So I always like to end these or start these with the prayers. And the prayer that I say every day, somewhere in here, I lost them, for the fourth step. And this is written in the singular, but I have to do it in the plural. God, help me to show these people the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant sick friends. These are sick people. How can I be helpful? God, save me from being angry. And if it can be healed, please reveal it. Thy will be done. That's for my fourth step for all those people that are on that inventory list. And then my fifth step prayer. God, I thank you from the bottom of my heart that I know you better. Help me to become aware of anything I have omitted discussing with another person. Help me to do what is needed to walk free at last. Thank you. Ooh, I went long.
You did it.
I went really long tonight. Sorry.
Is there any questions?
You mentioned, you know, the sponsor and the religious person, but how do you feel about someone taking this to a counselor, a psychologist, or that branch of? And the other part is, not my experience, but I've heard that people do part of their fifth step with one person and part with them, split it up. So I wondered if you had any experience with that.
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact, Kathy. I would think a counselor, psychologist, whatever it is, who understands what our fifth step is supposed to be. I think that's essential. And, of course, then the trust. You know, it's going to be confidential. You know that. But I think their understanding of what this program is all about is important, because the feedback that I get from my sponsor, co-sponsor, has been very, very helpful. And it's all based on AA principles. And to your second part, splitting, never thought about splitting up. It's painful enough to do with one person. Why would I want to do it with two? I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that, because I've done my entire fifth step with one person at one time. Now, other things have come up, and maybe I've used a different person at that case, but yeah. I know that the woman that I've just done my fifth step with these last two times has experienced difficulty with a family member that's very similar to the difficulty that I'm experiencing right now, and has walked through it. So I have used her for this because she's got the experience, strength, and hope in this kind of situation. But I didn't take any other part to anyone else. I did it all with her, so... don't know. I'd have to think about that one. I suppose there could be a situation, but can't think of one right off the top of my head. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh.
Thanks, Ellen.
Bye-bye.
Question for you.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any announcement for the membership?